Our next guest won an Olympic gold medal. Also won Battle of the Blades, which I'm sure that ranks very close for him. Dave Pelche joins us. Dave, how are you?
I'm very good, Jason. How about you?
I am doing excellent. I wanted to get you on because I'm sure you know there's a lot of controversy surrounding your sport, figure skating, that the Canadians got screwed over by the judging in ice dancing. First of all, do you know exactly what the judges are looking for in ice dancing?
No, I don't. Should I hang up and move on to the next
game? No, okay, but I asked that because now you obviously had a lot of teammates. Do the ice dancers know what they're looking for?
Yeah, the International Skating Union, that's the governing body of the sport. You know, we have a technical panel that decides of the rules for pairs and singles, men and ladies, and dance is so complicated and special that they have their own technical committee. So they're part of the figure skating family, but at the same time, if you look at the history of the sport, they've only been included into the Olympics in 1976, and figure skating was one of the oldest sports in the actual modern Olympics. And so it's still a fairly new sport when you think of it. And so, yeah, they're different. They're a different bunch, definitely.
Now, I know you obviously watch the Olympics. I'm assuming you watch the pairs maybe a little bit closer because that's what you competed in. You watched the ice dance, and I know a lot of people felt like, you know, the Americans were good, that maybe the Canadians, it just shouldn't have been a gap of 2.5 points. As a guy who has way more experience in figure skating, do you think Canada kind of got ripped off, having been there yourself before?
Okay, so let's look at it. Let's rewind about 10 days ago when the story in a French newspaper was written about. There was a deal between Russia and U.S.
Yeah.
And the source was anonymous, and then the source was Russian. So here we have a Russian anonymous source telling a story to a French newspaper. And I've told that to Strudwick. I think I did an interview with him. This is pretty much the same thing as getting insulted on Twitter by an egg face. You know, these little avatar with an egg.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't hold up, right? It's got really little credibility. So you take that story out. Let's say the newspaper, the French newspaper, wouldn't take in that story and made it a story. So what would have happened is that two nights ago, the American dancer would have won, and we wouldn't be talking about any controversy. But they did put a seed in the mind of the Canadian skating fans, because if you read what's going on in the U.S., whether it's the Washington Post, the USA Today, there's no controversy over there. And the reality is, they do it to themselves, the ice dancers. They say our sport is a little bit of sport and a lot of art. Well, then, fine, I'm okay with that. And it's debatable, but if you say it's art, then art is very subjective, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And so you're right in saying that I'm okay with the American winning. They're a great team. They haven't got beaten by anybody since, I think, late 2012.
Yeah.
So it's not like some team came in and all of a sudden, whoa, you know, they beat the best team in the world. Where the story is, Jason, in my opinion, is in if whoever's covering the Olympics is missing the boat. And if I'd be paid by someone to really inquire what's going on in the world of figure skating, I would start with the coach. Okay, because this is the same thing as Dallas Eakins coaching the Edmonton Oilers one weekend and going to coach the Calgary Flames the next weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Wanted or not, this is, you know, it's not to be condescending towards the athletes that do ice dancing. It's they're fantastic, phenomenal skaters, great athletes. It's a tough sport to be in, physically, mentally, no problem. But it's a sport, and behind every sport is some kind of strategy. So imagine you and I, okay, you're number one, I'm number two, we share the same coach. You're on the ice for an hour, and you're saying to your coach, listen, what's the strategy to beat those guys? She comes up with a strategy. The Zamboni comes on. Then, you know, she comes to me and I go, hey, what's the strategy to beat those guys? And she comes up with a strategy. Now, it makes absolutely no sense. And see, this coach, she's Russian. She's from the Soviet Union. We don't see her on TV. I want to sit her down on a chair and grill her. Like, how do you do it, number one? And how does this happen? There's a pattern here. The Canadian won in 2010. Then the American won in 2011. Then the Canadian won in 2012. and then the American one in 2013. We're talking world championships. So if you follow the pattern, it was kind of predictable that the American was going to win the Olympics. They're strong enough. I got no problem with that. But there's still, it just leaves that doubt in everybody's mind.
Dave Pelche joins us, and I've never seen that. I know that there's been some coaches that have, might coach two teams on the same country, maybe normally where you have an elite team and then a young team that's coming up and maybe is going to be the future. I've seen that before, but never two teams, the number one and number two team in the world in different countries, and they basically train together. It definitely doesn't look good. I do want to get your thoughts because you were in that presser situation, you and Jamie Soleil, where you're on the ice and everybody's like, hey, we want you to win. And Patrick Chan comes in. He has the opportunity to win the gold after the Japanese skater fell. Can you put in, and you've played hockey a lot, I know not at the NHL level, but the pressure of a figure skating event, whether it's singles or even in pairs, might be more than any other sport I can think of because there's nowhere to hide, and especially in the singles event, there's no one else to blame. It's either you and you win or you fall and it's on you. There's no one else to blame at that point. How do you think he dealt with that? And do you think that maybe most of us don't really understand how much pressure he felt at that moment?
No, it's very tough to understand until you're in that position. And I remember I saw it, I looked at it, and I kept, after every 30 seconds, he kept making a mistake. And I could relate somehow, but at the same time, when you know you're stepping on ice, if I go back to 2002, I knew the Russian had made a mistake, even though I did not watch them. By the marks. You're experienced enough to know that when the marks came up, I knew the door was open. And so it all depends what kind of mindset you have. Where do you prioritize? A lot of people, a lot of athletes, the mistake they do is they think about the outcome. They actually think about the gold medal. The gold medal will take care of itself if you think about the process, the 4.5 minutes. And it depends how you train. So I don't train with him, so I don't know where was his mind. But after reading a couple of interviews after the fact, he kept thinking about making history. You can't step on the ice having 4.5 minutes and think, I'm going to make history. This is not what you should be thinking about. What you should be thinking about is make sure you think about your keywords. Make sure you get speed before your quad. Make sure you hit the right pattern before the triple axel. So it depends where your mind is and where your priority is. I'm not saying he had his priorities wrong, but from what I'm reading, you can't step on the ice thinking, I got to make history. When we went to 2002, I think the last time a non-Russian pair team won the Olympics was in 1960. So obviously everybody was going, listen, you guys can change history. And I kept saying to them, listen, this is not my responsibility to pick up 40 years of mishaps from other pairs around the world. This is not my thing. I'm here for myself. I'm sorry, but I got enough to focus on. And as far as pressure, just think for 1 second. And I understand if you go back to Vancouver, everybody said, the men's hockey team have the most pressure. Okay, so we invest money that we don't even have. My Olympic year cost me $40,000. I didn't even have that money when I first started. Mm-hmm. So you beg, and you go and you hope for sponsorship, and you hope that the Canadian government's going to amp up those carding checks that I kept receiving as a world champion. I think it was $1,200 a month, and I'm supposed to live on that, right? And then I got one chance. 4.5 minutes. I'm naked out there. I'm in front of the judges, and I'm very accountable for what I do because every time I step on the ice, I do my thing, I get off, and then there's 9 people that decides in front of millions of people, today you were great, today you were not. And that's, in my mind, is pressure because if I miss, I have to wait another 4 years. Now, go to the hockey players, and I'm not saying they didn't have pressure, but let's just say, first of all, they have a tournament. So they have a couple of days to get into it. Number two, that pressure is divided among, in my opinion, 20-some players plus management that makes the team. And if what it doesn't work out, well, you go back home, you get enough money in the bank to, end up at the end of the month with food on the table, and you're going to play for the Stanley Cup. And so there's a big difference in my opinion, as far as pressure, when you're either somebody that's going for a gold medal in a sport where there's no, I guess, big money after it. And you hope when you win the gold medal that it's a big enough story so you can get money after that, you know, because it's not every gold medal that is guaranteed some kind of a sponsorship.
David Pelletier joins us, a former gold medal. That great explanation, and I think it really puts it into perspective. A lot of people don't, you know, pressure is like the, you know, the single mom trying to feed her few kids, right? And it's
yep.
no different than, you know, an Olympic athlete. You kind of have one shot in 4 years. And I wanted to relate that to the pressure of you've skated at World Championships, Dave, and then you skated at the Olympics. And the Olympics is, you know, way more people are watching. Now Canadians get into it. They don't get into the World Championships near it much. Like, figure skating fans will watch the figure skating championships, but sports fans watch the Olympics. Did you feel that much more pressure at the Olympics compared to, you know, World Championships before and after?
Yeah, you're so right. People watch the World Championships happens, nobody knows, right? You know after the fact, oh, that was on, and you watch the sports news, and boom, it's there. It's the pressure, and the difference is prior to the Olympics. I remember walking into you know, some kind of a hardware store to get a screwdriver or a hammer, and you know, people would recognize you and say, "Listen, you got to bring back the gold." And it's, you're like, "Well, what about if it's silver?" And no, it's got to be gold. Then you turn on the TV and you see the Olympic rings, because they put it on, whoever's got the rights for the Olympics, they put it on at the bottom of the screen, and you know, it's constantly. And then all of a sudden, you sign a deal with you know, General Mills, and your face is on the Cheerios box, and so you eat your breakfast before you go to rink, and you know, your face is on the Cheerios box. And that's a buildup, and it's all great and it's all fun. But want it or not, it kind of plays tricks on your mind, because it's constantly in your mind. And the World Championships, nobody really knows it's happening. And so therefore, you just do your own thing. You show up, and, you know, hopefully it turns out good. But there's a big, big, big difference. And I will add, today, it's a lot harder to be an athlete because of the social media. Back in 2002, at Canada House, where we stayed, you know, where we all slept, the Canadian athletes, there was 4 computers in the common room. And for most part of the day, they were sitting empty. Nobody really, emails were just starting to be kind of popular. Nobody had, you know, Twitter or Facebook and all that stuff. What blows my mind today is how many athletes are on those social media. And before, during, or even, you know, obviously after the Olympics. And that's just, to me, it would really bother me, because obviously you want to be visible. It's more exposure. The more followers you have, the greater it is for a company to go in and say, "Hey, I want to sponsor this athlete. He's got 25,000 followers. That is great for me. That's great for my company." And so they don't have a choice, but I feel like the more visible you are, the more pressure you carry. And you have to be an athlete to understand. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
No, it does.
But for us, it was easier to close the bubble because we were less exposed. I remember, I think it was November 1st, we put a date on the calendar and said, no more media. So from November 1st till the Olympics, nobody heard about me. It was easy for me to go to the rink and focus. Nowadays, you'll see people tweeting before the night before they compete, which actually blows my mind. Because even if you're not tweeting, you're reading what people are saying about you, and that adds pressure, because they have access to it. And it's a tough, tough, tough thing to deal with.
Dave Pelletier joins us. Excellent insight, Dave. Excellent commentary on how you can lose focus so quickly. And you mentioned that some athletes feel the need to have to do that as well as perform, just because they want to try to get funding. Even from 2002 until now, though, the funding for the top athletes, is it more than the $1,200 a month check that you received?
Oh, it's amazing now. I mean, it's so great. First, they came up with the idea that they would reward the athletes. I think it started in 06. So if you'd win a gold medal, they'd give you $20,000. I think it's still going. And I remember doing interviews and people saying, "Well, you should be happy for the athletes." I'm like, no, you have to understand, the Olympic athletes don't do it for the money. When we need the money, it's not when we win the medal, it's before. And then Own the Podium came in, because the feds, when Vancouver got the Olympic Games, the Fed jumped in and they created Own the Podium, where, you know, they throw in millions of dollars, and then the private sector throws in millions of dollars. So now Own the Podium obviously built some criteria saying, listen, if you're a world champion, it's written black on white on a piece of paper somewhere with very specific criteria. So figure skating winning a lot of medals will have more access to funding. More than maybe cross-country skiing. And that's the way it is. Some people might say it's not fair, but where there's money, there's got to be some accountability. So if you're a world champion now, it's written somewhere that you'll receive XXX amount of money. So that takes care basically of your year and maybe even some of your living expenses. So you don't have to go get that 5 o'clock job, you know, whatever you were doing. I was selling beer at the Molson Center when I was training for the Olympics, when back when I lived in Montreal.
Nice.
And, you know, at $60 a night, I mean, just every chance you get to make a couple of bucks, you take it, right? And so nowadays, it's very, very, very different. Yeah, they get great help, and thanks to the feds and thanks to the private sector.
David Pelletier joins us. Once you won that gold medal, and especially in the fashion in which you won it, David, did that make it finally where you and Jamie really were able to live? Like, did you have – I remember I think you guys were on the cereal box and you had quite a bit other sponsorship. Like, did that make that big of a difference and make the next few years at least a lot more relaxing for you as an athlete?
Oh, I honestly, if we would have won that medal outright that night without the controversy, I'd have probably a third of the money that, you know, I was able to build through the years, you know, today. That controversy brought a lot of exposure. Now, if you ask me, would you have rather won it outright that night? I would have said yes, because I never did it to get rich.
Yep.
But, you know, we were thrown into that situation, so we had a choice either to pout or to actually just have fun with it. We decided to have fun with it. By the time I left the Olympics, we had two great deals signed, one with PNG, the other one was with Roots. And we knew, obviously, winning an Olympic medal would open doors. See, we're the figure skaters. Like, I don't want to seem like I'm complaining a lot. I'm thinking a general athlete-wise. But the figure skaters back in 2002, if you won a medal, the doors would open a lot on the pro circuit. So Jamie and I signed, you know, a 4-year deal touring with Stars on Ice. We were guaranteed 80 shows a year, then plus, you know, the TV specials and all that stuff. So we toured for under 10 years after. We retired a year and a half ago. You know, we kept skating. So one door will close, this one opened. And believe me, they were beautiful double French doors. And we walked in it, and I had no problem. I didn't feel guilty taking what was given to me, because my parents, if you think about it, have invested so much money. I have invested so much money. And it's a risk. You invest not knowing if you're ever going to get a return. And so with the controversy, with the gold medal, yes, I did get back a lot of what I've put in, and being able to build a financial nest, you know, a lot of good security, where today I can do what I want.
Well, it's also gotten you a job to be a coach at Mount Carmel Hockey Academy, right?
So
that's where you're working with Sotheby and Strudwick. And I know we had, because I know the open house is there tomorrow, and earlier today we had Bill LaForge on, and he was talking about how you really helped the kids with power skating, because you're great at recognizing a stride right away and the strengths and deficiencies in it. I know you can't do it over the radio exact, but what are some of the basic things you pick up very quickly in wrong strides for hockey players?
Well, it all depends what age they are, Jason. When they grow, the problem is, you know, their limbs grow faster than the muscles. And so even to be able to hold their own weight on one leg, it's tough when you're 13 and 14, because a lot of kids have growth spurts, and the muscle, it takes a while before the muscle catch up. And then all of a sudden they find power, but they don't have that quickness. As one thing I like to work with the skaters, which blows my mind with the hockey players, that they're scared of their outside edge. And every time you go from forward to backwards, if you want to do it right, you got to ride your edge. And a lot of times they'll fall flat footed, and because, you know, they'll go both feet on inside edges, and they take the momentum the wrong way. Want it or not, being on an edge and being able to hold it while you're out of balance, to me, I can relate that to hockey.
Yeah.
And it's not like I went from figure skating all of a sudden and, you know, decided to be a power skating coach. I had to take the time to learn the game and how it's played and how it's played smart. Because nowadays, with the kids, it's not enough to tell them to do something. There's a selling feature that comes with it. So basically, you tell the kid, listen, this is what I'm going to do. You'll never use that in a game, but it will lead to something that we're going to do next week. And believe me, that's going to make a difference in your skating. So I love to work on edges and be able to, for a kid to understand that, yes, if you have the puck and you go down to a corner, you might get cut on one foot and you might get cut on out of balance. So I want you, through repetition, to be able to fire up those body awareness muscle to be able to hold that balance. Because want it or not, the hockey is a game where you have to react, and most of the time you're out of balance. And figure skating has taught me many things, and one of them is being able to, you know, be balanced on one foot on any kind of edge. And it's to give these kids options. You know, you can't always, because you don't have a choice, it's not always your decision to turn left a certain way. You got to be able to be versatile and not think, right? And before you do something without thinking, there's got to be a number of repetition that's quite high too.
Dave, we'll have to do this again soon, man. Always good to catch up with you. We'll talk again soon.
Jason, always a pleasure.